Hello, welcome to Concurrently, the News Coach podcast from World Radio and God's World News. We're here to come alongside you as you disciple kids and students through culture and current events. I'm Kelsey Reed. I'm here with Jonathan Bose.
Hello.
Together, we want to model conversation and apply tools you can use at home or in the classroom. We would love for you to send in your questions for us to address in future episodes. Please send your questions to newscoach@wng.org.
So we recently, I think when this comes out, it'll have been just a little less than 2 months ago, passed the year anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And when I think back to that moment in 2022 when Russia crossed into Ukraine, I remember the buzz in the air, on the news, on the internet that, you know, is this the start of World War III? And since then, tensions have risen. Jesus tells us to expect wars and rumors of wars. And I feel like that phrase is so apt for what we see in the news all the time today. The literal war raging in Ukraine and the rumors, Chinese spy balloons, Russian jets taking down U.S. drones. So today's question is one that I often have as a parent, but also as somebody who works here at God's World News, writing about these things for kids and teens. It's the question of how do we talk to kids about wars and rumors of wars? And so to help us tackle this question today, we have a guest with us, and it's somebody with whom our longtime God's World News readers should be familiar.
Yes, today we are joined by Vicky Drake, who I first met 2 days before the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. It's very interesting. My tenure here at GWN started 2 days before this historic event you've just been talking about. So interesting to imagine that and to connect with someone whose tenure was much longer than mine is so far. We are so thankful for your experience, your 30 years with us at God's World News. So Vicky Drake, we would love for you to tell us a little bit more about your time and your work at GWN, and also about your family and other experiences that you bring to bear in our conversation today.
Well, I am a Minnesota native. You may hear it in my voice when I speak. And I have lived in Asheville, North Carolina for the past 30 some years. So I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else in my life. I am married to a pastor. He is retired now, but he is still serving a small church in Black Mountain, North Carolina. And we have 4 children. Our oldest is a boy, and he and his wife have 9 children. And I have to say that they were pretty much my classroom for learning how to write for young children. I also have an unmarried daughter and one who lives in St. Louis, Missouri. And she has 2 boys. They're fraternal twins. If you met them on the street, you would never know they were brothers. They look totally different. Their personalities are totally different. They just look like they came from 2 different sets of parents. But it's fun to have twins in the house. And then our youngest is a daughter too, and she lives nearest to us, so we see those grandkids most of all. I started working for God's World News back in 1992, and I actually wrote mostly for teachers for the first several years, and nothing at all about the children, because each edition had an editor already, and they didn't need somebody to step in there. But Joel Bells, ever the thinker, ever the creator, had the idea that we could start to reach out to teachers. And so I wrote for them for several years. And then the gal that had been doing the writing for the youngest children, God's World News, moved away. And it was getting more and more difficult because it was before all of the wonderful things that we could do with our computers. And so there was a lot of faxing back and forth and things like that. And I think finally the editor-in-chief, who was Norm Bohmer at the time, decided that he really needed someone in the office. And so he started tuning me in because I had been doing a lot of work with this gal. And I learned by the seat of my pants, really, or maybe going back and forth to the fax machine or whatever. But I had paid attention to how she spoke to children, and she had taught kindergartners. And of course, I had taught school too, but I was an English teacher and I taught kids in middle school and high school. And so I really had no commerce with teaching younger children besides having my own. And then, of course, by having grandchildren come along. And those were the kids who really helped me to see what questions they were asking, how they learned. And through trial and error, I think I became fairly good at what I did and thoroughly enjoyed it, because seeing the world through the eyes of a small child is invigorating. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got here, and that's how I've been here. And I retired in September and enjoying maybe a little more relaxed life, but obviously life intervenes too.
Yes, like us, intervening and bringing you in to make you learn something new. Thank yes. you for your willingness to jump into podcasting with us.
When you thought you were out, we pulled you back in.
That's right. And what a wealth of experience. Just hearing you tell your story again is such an encouragement to me, to think of the way that the Lord has used you, has gifted you, and continued to train you for what he had for you to do for work, and what he continues to have as you mentor us today through your words on how we connect with our young children. Both Jonathan and I have young children, my youngest being almost 8. Jonathan's both younger than mine, but close in age. And just you help us to think about how to engage these lovely little creatures well and with tenderness. So God's Big World editor. How long did you end up being editor for God's Big World?
Well, I worked for the company for 30 years, and I think for the first 10 years or so, I was either writing exclusively for teachers or I was being brought in on upper level writing. So like maybe the fourth, fifth, sixth grade level. And then when the need arose, then I, of course, took over the job of writing for the smallest children. You have to think about vocabulary. You have to think about the length of a sentence. And you have to think about what they're thinking about. Again, that's why my grandchildren were a big help to me during that process. And it was slow learning. My editor had a bright red marker that he used, and I learned that way. It was just like my teaching children English.
And we learn
by that. Same kind of thing. We learn by doing.
Yes, yes. So in terms of, you've already begun to answer this question that I have about what to keep in mind with communication to those younger grades, but particularly fine-tuning it towards this topic of war. What do we need to bear in mind when we're communicating about such difficult topics with kids, in writing or in person?
Well, first of all, we tried to avoid that topic with the smallest children as much as we could. We could talk about soldiers, and we could talk about war in general, but nothing that was going to bring it too close to them. Partly or mostly because we didn't want to frighten them. Also, we didn't know when the parents wanted to introduce the topic to their children. And so I don't remember ever writing anything specifically about a war that wasn't pretty general in its context, always reminding them that God knows what's going on. God is in control, and he loves them, and they needn't be afraid. And that was about the extent of it.
Mm. It sounds like the grammar school of our Christian worldview. Mm-hmm. I hear the tenderness towards the heart of the young, and I hear that sense of the greatest supply that they need is that relationship with the Lord and understanding of his authority and his goodness. Mm-hmm. What a great reminder. We often talk about the use of the redemptive narrative as a tool that we suggest that parents employ at home. You're starting with that understanding of who is God and who is the one who created and sustained all things. So thank you for, you know, driving us right back to the gospel, to our Christian framework. What are other things that you might begin with, or how did you handle those conversations even at home with your children? Or what ways might you have used to introduce war to your kids? Maybe not through the news story. Did you have other tools?
Yeah, like you were saying, allowing parents to introduce that topic to their kids. You as a parent, how did you choose to introduce a topic like that to your children?
Well, I think you have to listen to your children. They ask questions. Of course, even television news was much more mild, I think, when our children were small. And I barely remember those days. But I think the television set wasn't on very often. So things like that didn't come up. And I really can't pinpoint when I might have had to have the opportunity when my children were young in school, or even just young at home, to consider that topic. But I do think that children listen very well to other people, oftentimes not their parents. And if they were anything like me, it was easy to sit quietly in a conversation with my grandparents and my parents around a table, not saying anything, but absorbing an awful lot. And so I'm sure that as parents, you might be talking about some of those things that you've seen or heard, and your kids hear you. And you're going to have to be willing to let them ask you a question. But you might even start with asking questions of your own, like, what have you heard? What are you concerned about? Are you afraid? Those kinds of things to begin with, I think.
I'm so encouraged by that posture. It's one that I seek to operate with at home, but you support that. You affirm those practices for me, and it holds my heart in ways that I hope we're able to encourage anyone listening that these are key practices. The asking of questions, the recognizing that our children are observing and listening, and maybe that also helps us to be conscious of how often we have the TV on or the screen in the context.
Yeah. I know when I was growing up, it was, you know, the TV news would be on. But now with social media and everything, there's like a news widget on my phone that if I scroll the wrong way, I just, no matter where I am or what I'm trying to do, I see the latest headlines. It's a lot harder to escape even nowadays, especially if, you know, your kids are at an age where they're on social media or on their phones and things like that.
And of course, children live in families, and many of them have older brothers and sisters who already are talking about those things in school or with friends or whatever. And so you kind of have a blank slate, I think, when you have your first child. And then after that, of course, it gets more complicated. And so, as I said, allow them to ask questions and really just try to answer those questions in the simplest way possible, because you don't want to frighten them. I recall as a child being in school and we had air raid drills. And it was during the time of the Cold War. So war was on our minds. I can picture us in third and fourth grade doing that. It was kind of a novelty that we could get under our desks because some of the desks we had were pretty old looking. But there was tension. I think the teachers were just matter of fact. If anything happens, this is what we have to do. I also grew up in tornado country. And so we were not averse to fleeing to the darkest corner of the basement in order to sit out a tornado that might be coming through. So that would be something that I would compare it to as a small child, if you have something like that, or hurricanes or something like that, that you could compare it to. But that might be a little over the top for a young child. And so again, I think don't come in with both barrels, but just go cautiously. And sometimes you can give a really simple answer and your child is content with that and will go away and ruminate on it and come back and ask you another question another time so that you don't have to hit them with everything all at once.
Well, we can feel that temptation, can't we? Mm-hmm. I know that that's something that I'm often doing, trying to download all the information that they might need to defend themselves emotionally or mentally. And even in the context that you've provided today, you know, I'm reminded of something we covered in a recent episode, you know, something that we can hardly fathom, that they have to do drills for the potential of shooter incidents in the school. Mm-hmm. But you remind me through your story that there have been drills that are in place, that are a part of our practices, and that so much of it has to do with the matter of fact posture of the adult who's engaging. But there's also something that you mentioned before about allowing for there to be a degree of separation or not downloading all of the information at once. But in that degree of separation that you mentioned specifically for our younger ones, that we're talking about a person who's a soldier, or we're not going into explicit details of a war that is currently in place. We're telling aspects of the story, not the full story. It reminds me of something that happens when we read fiction. And so just jump into that place for a little bit, where we talk about that degree of separation when we read a story that is not detailing the facts, but gives us a chance to become acquainted with the idea of war. I think of Narnia. I think of Tolkien's works. Each of these paints a picture of what war looks like and helps us to even grasp that there are just reasons for war, at the same time as there being broken engagement of war. But because it's not something that is currently occurring in our lives, we can look at it together, shoulder to shoulder, as parent and child, and think about it with a little bit less of that anxiety. Mm-hmm. So you've talked a number of times about being aware of the emotional response. And here's another tool that can help just to mitigate those difficult emotions.
You're listening to Concurrently, the News Coach podcast. We'll be right back.
High school is a time of transition as young adults learn to take ownership of their education. The EQUIP program from Unbound empowers students and parents for this important time with Christian coaching, online courses, and academic accountability. Prioritize building a long-lasting relationship with your teen. Unbound's ebook on homeschooling high school is available for free PDF download. More at beunbound.us/worldpodcast.
A couple weeks ago, I had the great pleasure of meeting with some of you at the GHC convention in Greenville, South Carolina. We'll be at another great homeschool convention this weekend at the Duke Energy Plaza in Cincinnati, Ohio. Come see us in the World booth or come to my workshop where we talk some more about application of the tools that we seek to employ in Concurrently.
And for a full schedule of the conventions Kelsey will be visiting this season, you can see our show notes. One question I had, and this is getting a little bit more into older children. So what I do at God's World News, usually I'm writing either for the kids level or the teen level. Mm-hmm. So I know with your work at God's Big World, it was for much younger children, but you know, you as a parent have walked through things like this with teenagers. When we get into the topic of the complexity of war, you know, when we're dealing with it with the younger children, the teen level of our magazine really doesn't go up that far into the teen years. So even a lot of that audience is still children. And so we're trying to paint facts, but not, again, cause anxiety or fear. But we also start touching on some of the more complex issues of war. Just the other day, I was writing about this incident where a Russian jet took down a U.S. drone and how both sides tell different stories about what happened. And maybe Russia's a bad example because it's very clear that what Russia is doing in Ukraine is wrong. But so often nowadays, it can be hard to tell, you know, when something is a just reason to fight or not a just reason to fight. And so I'm wondering if you've had any of those experiences of having to deal with that topic with children or teens, of the complexities that come with war.
I think that we have to remind ourselves and our older children too, that not all people are like this. We all, of course, have a tendency, because we're sinful people, and this is how we act. But at the same time, remembering that, for example, if the children are talking about what Russia is doing in Ukraine, not all Russian people are like this. Maybe a good number of them don't like what's happening. Maybe they're afraid like we might be. Often when we're talking about something like this, we just paint Russia is bad. Mm. And there are a lot of people in Russia who are not. And certainly there are a lot of people in Russia who are believers and who know it, at least to some extent, what is happening and don't understand it. They can be calling out to God right now, asking, why are we doing this kind of a thing? So I think that that's one thing that we should keep in mind when we're writing to kids, not to label everybody.
I know one thing that was mind-opening to me when I was growing up, when I was a young teenager, was learning about German people who resisted the Nazis mm-hmm. in Germany, especially young people like the members of the White Rose, who were like college age and younger, writing essays essentially against what the Nazis were doing. And yeah, just that remembering, like you said, it's not all people are the same. Even in a nation or under a government that's doing something wrong, there are people who are still, you know, wanting goodness.
And you brought it back to the redemptive narrative again. We see that there is depravity, or the potential for depravity, sinful act in every person, as well as the goodness that is inherent to our being as human beings. So it traces back to creation again, that the Lord made us all as image bearers, and he has redeemed us to be agents of his goodness in the world. So you're tracking us through, you know, there is a complexity as each person lives out a life that began as very good, but has been corrupted by sin. And that as we, you know, have our institutions of man, that we corrupt those institutions with our sin. And yet there is this mystery that you're running us back to, that when we can't fathom why there have been these heinous acts of one country, atrocities against another, and yet there's goodness within, there's a group of people who are living out the gospel and helping to be culture shapers there. And that is a part of the mystery of the way that the Lord works. And so you're driving us back to that mystery with the complexities of what we see in war.
And I think, too, that another thing that we can do is we can soften whatever maybe frightening effects that your children are experiencing or thinking about, with reminding them that God has people who are helping in these bad situations, and enumerate them, you know, the people who have taken supplies in, the people who have taken medicine in, the people who have taken refugees into their homes in the different countries surrounding Ukraine, things like that, that remind them that God has his hands and his feet on the ground as well as in our hearts. So we need not fear that either, because there are people there who are willing to help.
That is so good. Because I think often that thought of, you know, God is in control or God is working, it can feel kind of nebulous. Mm-hmm. But when you remember that he called those people to do those good things, when we see people providing aid and helping, that is God at work. And that's a really incredible truth.
And so you're telling the good news at the same time as telling the bad news. Right. What a joy that we have the privilege of doing that, where we stand here at God's World News within World News Group, that we have the great privilege of telling the Lord's best news mm-hmm. and of his people who are seeking to live faithfully in these circumstances.
You know, my wife, Chelsea, who has been writing for World Kids for a good 10 years now. She didn't even know what we were talking about today, but she posted in our team's Slack channel, Proverbs 15:30, light in a messenger's eyes brings joy to the heart and good news gives health to the bones. And she was saying that even when the news isn't good per se, in the work we do, we can still have light in the messenger's eyes. We're not painting a fake light on, she said, but we're showing that God really is in control and that he really does care. And that when we do this, we are, you know, we are giving health and hope to the people who are reading the news and the kids who are reading the news. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really great thought. And it just so applies to what we're talking about now.
It does. And it connects me with that last portion of our redemptive narrative or the topics of the redemptive narrative, in that we have a hope that is in something that is yet unseen, and yet because we've seen the Lord's faithfulness through his people, we know that that is not this hope against hope thing, that there is the promise of these days being brought to completion, and that we will be someday in a posture where there will be no more war. I'm already thinking about those rich scripture verses that we want to leave you with today, but what a promise that there is going to be glory, that there's going to be a time where war is no more.
So before we wrap up in our usual place of providing you some tools and sharing some scripture supply that relates to this topic, Vicky, thank you so much for being here. We covet your wisdom on this topic of talking to kids. Just the experience you bring to it is a literal treasure. So before we end, is there anything else you would like to share with us and our listeners?
I would just say that you know your children best, and you certainly have, if you have more than one child, you have different personalities and different ways in which they process things. And while you want to be proactive and you want to be able to help them through some of these things, remember that you also have fears for them and for yourself, and you also have questions that you cannot answer. So when they ask you a question and you aren't sure what the answer is, don't be afraid to say, "I don't know." Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes that means you can also add, "but we can ask so-and-so, and maybe he or she can give us some help with that." I think that particularly when we're new parents, we think we have to know it all, and we have to be able to cover every base, and that's just impossible. And it gets even more impossible, as I said, in a household where you have many, many children with different personalities, and each one is going to react to things differently. So, of course, you have to be attuned to that. But don't be afraid to say, "I don't know." And then go to Scripture and show them how they can help you just with your questions. Find some answers. And that is really comforting, that we have God's Word written down and we can open it up and look at it and think about it. Yes. And so be encouraged, because you're doing the very best that you can, and God is rewarding you. You might not see it today, but you definitely will see it.
Thank you for helping us plant those seeds of hope and just thoughts that can bear such beautiful fruit as we encourage those practices of even saying, "I don't know, let's go find out together." And affirming the questions that our children come to us with, and maybe drawing them out with questions of our own. Question asking and being able to say, "I don't know, this is a mystery." Those are great things. So some tools to potentially leave you with for fostering those conversations. We talked about a couple books that are fiction books, and I want to say that, you know, another great book for your older kids and teens, All Quiet on the Western Front. We talked about that being an excellent place to also source some material for conversations.
And I would reiterate, older teens, be aware it is a book that does not shy away from the graphic depictions of war. That was the Great War. How old am I? It was World War I. But it is a powerful book.
It does. And it helps, again, it helps reveal those complexities of whether it was a just war or not. So many questions that you can ask in engaging this specific work of fiction. We use a tool to do that, to engage media well. We talk about it in our blog. We're talking about it in our podcasts, and we're even modeling it in a very specific episode that I think at this point will be coming out sometime after this recording. We use something called the SOAR method, where we ask the questions, what is this about? What do we observe going on? Why did this happen? And how do we respond? So when we're looking at stories, whether they be fiction, whether they be in the news, sit down, ask those questions with your children, draw them out, ask them how they're feeling, as Vicky just encouraged us to remember, think about the emotional response along with those mental processes that are going on behind the eyes. And now that we've left you with some of those tools to think about and consider and employ at home, we also want to leave you with provision. So from scripture today, Isaiah 2:4 says, "And he shall judge among the nations and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore."
Psalm 46:9, "He makes wars to cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariots with fire."
And from Matthew 24:6-8, "You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All of these are the beginning of birth pains."
Birth pains, that's when we hear about these things going on in war and our kids maybe have questions about it. There's another spiritual application that we can point them to, the fact that these are evidences of a fallen world, but these are the birth pains that tell us there is another kingdom coming where there will be no war.
We'll be made just like him when we see him face to face, and he will wipe every tear from our eye. So many beautiful promises to help us to gird up our response to the challenges. So, parent, teacher, mentor of children and teens, you are best placed to engage these conversations with your kids. You will have the greatest impact as you nurture their faith and talk about the difficult things. He's placed you there for a purpose, and he has equipped you for the work.
You've been listening to Concurrently, the News Coach podcast from God's World News and World Radio, hosted by Kelsey Reed, produced by Jonathan Bowes, music licensed from Envato Elements. You can send us an email at newscoach@wng.org. That's newscoach@wng.org. We would love to be able to answer your questions so we can come alongside you as you disciple your kids and students through the news. If you like what you heard today, rate and review this podcast wherever you're listening. Share it with someone else who's trying to figure out how to disciple kids through today's world. You can follow Kelsey on Twitter @TheNewsCoach. And to read more from The News Coach, or to learn more about our discipleship resources for kids and teens, visit gwnews.com.
This episode is only the beginning. Your kids can receive our magazines, too. Concurrently is produced by God's World News. We provide current events materials that show how God is working in the world. God's World News, building news literacy to better live out the gospel. Browse sample magazines and read News Coach essays at gwnews.com.